Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. We go behind the headlines, and the headlines this week reached from Alexandria, Virginia to Belleville, Illinois. I'm referring, of course, to the shooting attack against congressmen in Alexandria and the fact the man identified as the shooter, James Hodgkinson, was from Belleville. Illinois Republican Congressman Mike Bost's 12th district includes Belleville, and the congressman joins us now by phone. Congressman Bost, nice to have you with us.
Thanks for having me on, Don.
I know it's been... go ahead.
I wish it was under different circumstances, you know, the conversation we had to have. It's been a challenging week, an emotional week for not only the people on the field, but the members of Congress of the whole, both sides of the aisle. You know,
the nation as well.
Yeah. You know, when Wednesday morning, the major issue was that we had already moved some veterans bills, and we were looking forward to me moving on and working on other bills, and there was a group of us that are together at a prayer meeting on early Wednesday morning, and that's how I found it out. It was just, matter of fact, they weren't even sure that they had got the shooter yet, but one of the staffers comes in, and it was about 7:20, 7:30. And says that Steve Scalise has been shot. And I said, he can't be. I said, and I was, you know, everybody thinks it would happen on the Hill. And I said, there's no way. I said, he's at ball practice. He said, that's where the shooter is.
Wow.
And so then we kind of scatter and start trying to find out information and everything. And, you know, you're getting bits and pieces of it. And then it was less than an hour, and, you know, it didn't come out who the shooter was to the general public very quickly because they were keeping it quiet, but it was less than an hour. My chief of staff came into my office, and he said, I just got a call from the Capitol Police, and they wanted to know about James, and then they gave the name, and what you know about him. And I and my chief said, is he a threat or something like that? The guy on the other end of the phone said, he's the shooter.
Huh. And he's from Belleville, Illinois.
And he's from Belleville, Illinois.
Go ahead.
You know, we just instantly went to start searching our records. You know, you want to make sure that if you had a communication with someone and they showed any sign that we hadn't failed in our duty to report, okay?
Yeah.
So we wanted to know every communication, and he had communicated in the last 11 months with us 10 times, 9 times by email, 1 time by telephone. All of them were statements that he didn't like how we were voting on this, or he didn't want us to vote this way on this, but no threats in there. Nothing at all that showed that he was going to do something, you know, and we get those. We have had, even in this short period of time that I've been in, I had it many times in the state too, but people that actually go to a point of threatening.
Sure.
And then you know there's probably a mental issue involved. You get the proper authorities involved, and you try to cure anything from like this from happening.
Is this going to change the way you respond to letters when we get so many over a short period of time from someone?
No, I don't think so, because there's no way we'll be able to read, because if you see his letters, and others have asked to turn them over, but we turn them over to the FBI and everybody so they can have it. But if you see in these letters, there was nothing, because if we said, okay, if I had somebody that writes me once a month on an issue, I have thousands of people who write me once a month on an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they agree, sometimes they disagree, but nothing that would have shown, you know, this case. And
Is this incident, Congressman Bost, likely to influence any kind of legislation? I mean, here we have one of the big issues that you fellas and ladies face in Washington is gun control, for instance. Do you think because now the shooters are shooting at congressmen, there's likely to be a different attitude toward gun legislation?
No. Well, there may be with a few. I have a feeling no matter where you're at on the gun issue, this didn't change it one way or the other. You know, the guys from Illinois. In Illinois, you've got a FOID card. No other state has a FOID card. So all gun purchases are tracked, It does still fall on mental health, but I don't see that type situation, but it does come up with what types of language and or issues might be worked on dealing with where our security is at, because remember, only the top five on each side of the aisle receive a security detail. Mm-hmm. And if Steve Scalise had not been on that field, and his security, because that meant his security detail was there, then Steve would have, then it would have been carnage to a level you couldn't imagine. Because, well, first off, if you're on the Hill, and know this, if you're on the Hill, you're pretty safe. Because there is not a time, those people who have visited out there, there's not a time that you're not within a clear eye view of at least one to five officers, you know, because it's patrolled there. But this is a case, and I think, you know, the investigation will have to reveal, this guy did a lot of research finding out that the members of Congress went to this particular field that they practiced in the morning, that, you know, all the time that they would be available out there, and because that's the time that because no one except staff, and it wasn't a hidden secret, don't get me wrong, but if you told somebody, it was so they could have a good time to come out and watch his practice. You know, that would be the idea, not thinking that it would have to be patrolled against something like this.
Sure. The fact that Capitol Police, the security detail was there, certainly saved some lives. But I just want to back up a little bit here, because it's also been pointed out that if Hodgkinson had a silencer, he probably would have taken more lives. And that's legislation that you're debating right now as to whether to legalize silencers on firearms.
No. That's a misunderstanding of that legislation. Okay. There is not a silencer bill out there. There is what's known as a baffle bill. And a baffle bill does not silence the weapon. That's what a lot of people that don't understand guns are talking about on the baffle. And the baffle is a completely different item that we're talking about. That was actually explained in a committee where a lot of people are going, oh, they're saying these are silencers. No, they're a shotgun baffler. Okay, uh-huh. And they're a way that controls the blast of the end of the barrel, and it is not a silencing device. You still have the noise. That being said, that particular baffler is for shotguns, not for high-powered rifles like what the shooter used. So, but. You know, that's the problem quite often when we hear about gun legislation. When people who, and that's a problem with a lot of our legislation. A lot of times you're asked to vote on things that haven't taken the time to take and study the issue. Sometimes people vote based on public perception, not on what is real. And that's bad. And that's bad, especially when you start dealing with this.
I'd like to talk about the other potential of fallout from this incident this past week.
Sure.
Were you at the game last night?
I was.
And that was called by many a big kumbaya moment. I mean, everybody seemed to be getting along. The question now, Congressman Bost, is this attitude of collegiality going to continue beyond a day or two, as so often is the case?
I hope so. I can't guarantee that. I can guarantee you that I'm going to work to and try to watch myself and our colleagues. Now, understand, there's a great statement that I learned years ago that I will use in this case, and it really is something that applies to Congress and state legislatures and any place that legislation is passed. Conflict is inevitable. Combat is optional. When we work on legislation, we will disagree. That's the way our forefathers put it together, and it's a good thing. Because by disagreeing, coming up with all of the ideas, working back and forth, unfortunately, the partisanship has climbed so much to the level over the years. And whether it's because of social media or a 24-hour news cycle or where it comes from, but where it also comes from is when members say things like, if this bill passes, people can die. You know, when if you look at the language and truly look at the language, if you're trying to advance your cause, this is making a statement that we believe that this is better if we pass this because we think it benefits the people more that way. But to all of a sudden say that you're passing language that people are going to die, what that may do, and that's the concern you can have out there, is that might have that person that's out there that thinks they're going to be the hero and can go out and shoot anyone who would vote for this legislation. That's a danger whenever our comments in the media, on the floor, in committee, get out into this 24-hour news and social media network.
You know, I'm glad you brought this up because you are quoted during an interview with Fox News saying that this shooting should serve as a wake-up call for the American people to unite and stop the hateful rhetoric. It seems to me, Congressman, that most of the rhetoric is coming from the politicians, that the last political campaign.
Yes, you're right. Okay. And the media. Uh-huh. And the media. And it is because, and that's nothing new. You know, if you look back at America at its beginning, the newspaper, at least most of them have the name of whatever side they were on, such and such Republican, such and such Independent, such and such Democrat. You know, I mean, they said that's who we support. Well, you have that in a lot of these network news programs, and they also go, and both sides, I'm not claiming one over the other here, both sides continue to push this until each group from each side continues to climb in their anger and their frustration. So you still got to have your freedom of speech. But, yes.
It's got to be toned down. It's got to be toned down. It's got to be toned down.
And let me agree with you on this. And it's got to start with the legislature.
Right. Well,
it's got to start with Congress.
I think a lot of people would agree with that. Our time is winding down here, but I do want to get you to respond to a tweet that we've just received asking how you can both acknowledge the mental health as a factor in gun-related violence and say that there's no need to address it in some sort of legislation.
We actually have. We had a major mental health bill that if you'll look it up, it was sponsored by Tim Murphy. He was a chief sponsor. We worked on it quite a bit. And we're also dealing with it through my committee on the VA. So we are working on those issues, as we should. And I the person that tweeted, I want to tell you, please look and see what we're doing, because this is a bipartisan effort by the experts in the mental health field to move forward with things that truly will try to notice when something is going wrong and deal with it well before something like this out of control.
Okay, we've got to wind it down, but I just want to point out that a lot of people are looking for some profiles and courage from the people on Capitol Hill to step up and take a leadership role and change the way business is being conducted and the rhetoric and tone of that business.
I agree.
You'd agree with that. Congressman Mike Bost, thank you so much. 12th District Republican Congressman. Nice to talk to you again. Sorry about the circumstances, but we'll chat another time, I'm sure.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Coming up, what happened when reporters in Belleville found themselves in the middle of this big story? This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. And welcome back as we continue behind the headlines. Local newsrooms, including our own, got into gear quickly Wednesday when it was revealed that James Hodgkinson, named as the shooter in the attack on congressmen in Virginia, was from Belleville. Joining us now is Dana Reek, breaking news reporter with the Belleville News Democrat. She joins us by phone. Dana, thanks for taking the time.
Thanks for having me.
And congratulations to your paper, by the way. I noticed that it's been getting kudos from some pretty prestigious sources. The folks at Poynter and the Columbia Journalism Review giving you guys very high marks for your coverage.
Yes, we're extremely excited for the positive feedback we've gotten.
This is really, pointing to what local newspapers, you're not the biggest newspaper in the bi-state area, but you certainly have a good team, and what local newspapers can do on the biggest of stories.
Yes, definitely. I think that us being situated right where he grew up and lived his whole life really shows the importance that lower-level newspapers like us that aren't necessarily on the national scale can have. In putting stories like this into perspective.
And a lot of people on the national scene have turned to you guys for information on this story.
Certainly. I know we have a lot of content that he's submitted to our newspaper throughout the years. And so that right there gave us an insight into who James Hodgkinson was before the shooting. He wrote several letters to the editors throughout the years, mainly focusing on tax issues. He wrote in once about the legalization of marijuana, which he was for, in addition to several questions to our Answer Man column starting back in 1997. So a lot of insight.
How quickly did this picture of him emerge? I mean, somebody had to be aware that you had been receiving these communications from him and say, hey, that's the guy.
You know, I'm not so sure that we clicked like that, but once the news broke out, the first instinct was we sent a reporter out to the house, Kelsey Landis, and she actually beat the law enforcement there. And then we had, everybody in our newsroom mobilized, and we had people looking up through our archives because that research resource was so valuable. And so, within minutes, we could pull up everything that had his name attached to it.
My impression is, correct me if I'm wrong, is that you were there early, and you were really the first one to get rolling on all of this.
I was, yeah. So I work the morning breaking news shift, so I'm here first, getting it going. And I started the story with a local spin on a national shooting. So I was contacting representatives, that we're familiar with here in Southern Illinois. I was actually on the phone with Representative Bost, when the news broke, at least in our office, I hung up the phone and looked up, and there was quite a buzz with everybody.
How quickly were you able to mobilize once it was realized that this gentleman was from Belleville?
We mobilized immediately. My managing editor Jeff Couch. I like the way he says that we wolf pack these big stories. So the minute we knew he was from Belleville. Like I said, Kelsey Landis was, driving to his house. And a big shout out to Brian Brigham and Jamie Forsyth, two of our news editors, who really turned what kind of sounds like a clumsy garage band into just a well-tuned symphony, bringing just the best in-depth coverage to our readers.
What has the impact of this story been on the community as you were able to take the pulse?
I think when you look at the stories we've written about people who knew him or, throughout his life or recently, I think the community in general is surprised. Even those closest to him said, James had his political beliefs and he was active and, he vocalized them, but nobody seemed to think that he was capable of such an extreme act.
Is the community embarrassed by this, or just it's one of those things?
I'm not sure they're embarrassed, I'm not sure we've taken the temperature of that. It's so recent. I think maybe it's still settling with people that, he was their next-door neighbor. Maybe people are still in shock in a way that, something like this. And it happened so far away, so I think there's some time that they need to digest before really processing the reality of it.
You talk about shock. I watched the interview with his wife yesterday, and I don't know if you were there or if you saw it, but you certainly had to feel sorry for her. I mean, talk about a wolf pack on her front lawn, and she's never had to face anything like this before. I felt very sorry for her.
Right, and most people like that aren't you know, obviously prepared for the media attention and on such a national level, too. You know, when things happen in the community, it's only a few of us who want to reach out and talk to you. But when it's something that's, you know, this major and this national, yeah, I mean, there's just no way she could have been prepared for, unfortunately, the media onslaught, because there's a story to tell and we're all trying to tell it.
How are you getting along with the national press that's there?
You know, I can't say we've had too much contact. I know the first day, especially, you know, when the news broke, my name was on that story before, you know, we kind of shifted the byline to be more staff-oriented. So I got a lot of those media contacts asking to use our photos, asking to use, you know, whatever information we had dug up at the point that they were emailing, which is fine. But we sort of had to divert all of that attention because, you know, we were focused on our reporting and digging as deep as we can to, you know, understand his life, who he was, and what he did up until the point he left in March.
Were the big players treating you guys with respect, or were they thinking if they came from either coast or wherever that this is Hicksville and you guys don't know what you're doing?
Right. You know, I can't say I've heard of any specific instance that was, you know, outright disrespectful. You know, and I'm sure there's that air that they are the bigger, you know, they are the bigger fish. And so, but we don't give into that. I know my managing editor, Jeff Couch, talked to Poynter about it, and we submitted some of our stuff to AP, so, you know, anyone who's a member could use that content. But, yeah, I don't think we've heard, you know, of anything disrespectful happening. You know, we have two different jobs. When you look at national media and community-level media, that's why I love working for a local paper. You know, we're trying to report in-depth and really get down to the bottom of it. And unfortunately, you know, we're a blip on their radar, and next week they're on to something else.
I'm glad to hear that you haven't had any bad experiences that way. One final question, Dana. Where does the story go from here, from your perspective?
From my perspective, you know, I know we're working, you know, we're still unpacking the event as a whole. I know we have reporters, you know, I'm working on a story today about the, you know, the incident and the police training that goes into that. We have reporters on really looking at some of the events in James's life in the early 2000s and late 90s. And so I think we unpack it some more. And then I think, you know, at some point it does go to community reaction and how people are, you know, taking in that this man is from where they live.
Yeah. Well, we're going to let you, Dana Reek, get back to work. I want to thank you so much for spending a little time with us today and giving us your perspective on this story.
Sure. Thanks so much for having me.
And congratulations to the staff once again for a job well done. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.